as I wait, heart of God.
Hello, new life, and welcome to the Growth Group podcast, where we believe that spiritual growth happens better in circles than it does in rows. My name is David Haken, and I'm joined by Jonathan Markham, the pastor of New Life Christian Fellowship here in Pacifica, California, and we record these podcasts to help you get the most out of your small group discussion each week. This week, we are continuing our series entitled Some Doubted, looking at various character studies of individuals who have experienced some doubt in their journey of faith. We looked at the disciples after Jesus' resurrection. We looked at Job and his mighty struggles. Just this last week, we took a look at Abraham and Sarah, and now, as of last Sunday, you've examined the early ministry of the mighty prophet Elijah. He is such an interesting and unique character. It's just the book of 1 and 2 Kings is so unique because we kind of set things up with the passing the mantle on to Solomon, and then, of course, the division of the nation into northern Israel and southern Judah, and then we just get this back and forth, kings of Judah, kings of Israel, kings of Judah, kings of Israel, and time passes pretty quickly in those accounts. A lot of them are fairly brief, but then once we get to King Ahab in Israel in the north, things slow down to just a halt, and we get this span of almost maybe a third of 1 and 2 Kings there between 1 Kings 16 and 2 Kings 10, where we're just looking at just this narrow period of time, maybe 20, 25 years. Clearly the author is doing something. I think it has to do with Baalism, but it has to do with these two prophets as well, Elijah and his successor Elisha. What drove you to take a look at this account? How have you found it compelling in your preparation?
Well, I think the reason why I chose Elijah, because there's a number of people I could have.
It's a universal experience, right? So it should be everyone's story.
And it's the last of it's. It's the one. I'm only doing three from the Old Testament, and I'll probably do three from the New Testament. At least that's my plan at the present moment.
Cool.
Elijah, I think he has a very distinct reason for where he dives into doubt, and it's a deep. It's what we would now call he got burnt out, and there are all sorts of things that I think that point towards his getting burnt out, and there are things which are, for many people, are a universal experience. And so I think that one of the things that we've sort of stretched ourselves to see is that although these people and their experiences were so many thousands of years ago, mm-hmm. there are parallel experiences that people have now that have distinctive lessons for us to learn in the way in which God helps them deal with doubt. God, for Job, God took him and said, look, you have no idea how big the picture is, and you're doubting, yes, I understand, but it's because you've forgotten that I'm way bigger than you think you are, than you think. Then we had Abraham, who struggled with the, in a sense, with the smaller things. But God never, it really struck me that God just gently moved him through his doubts, and didn't, there was no great admonishment each time he doubted, and I think that's a great encouragement that we're on a journey of learning, and that I do firmly believe that there is no the road to belief is through doubt, mm-hmm. And Abraham really shows us that. Now Elijah shows us something completely different, it's something that's again really important, I think, for the way in which mm-hmm. we we handle.
Yeah, and we see those lessons, especially in 1 Kings 19. And because we're going to look at this passage so closely, and because there are so many interesting, at times, shocking details within this chapter, it makes sense that we resurrect an old question, a question that you were familiar with, 4 or 5 months ago, the close reading question. And I'm going to read that for you to spark your memory. And then maybe we'll talk for just a minute about the importance of this kind of practice when doing our Bible study. Close reading. After praying for God to enlighten your mind, read through 1 Kings 19 a couple times slowly. Look for these three things. A light bulb, something that shines from the passage and draws your attention. A question mark, something difficult to understand. And finally, an arrow, which we are calling a personal application from the passage. Share the results of your study now with your group.
I think this is obviously, we've used it many times before, and it's a really, when we have a focused passage, like indeed we do here. I mean, I'm going to draw a fairly rapid picture of the whole of Elijah's context and his life. But this is the focus of Elijah's doubt. The struggle with doubt. And these are the things that I think encourage us to look at the thing that there may be things that I didn't even notice when I was preparing to preach that you notice, that you struggle with, or that you think this is a real personal application for you. And I'm quite sure that as we share those things, we'll bless one another.
Well, let's see if this second question will provide some blessing for you as well. It's called blinding fear. Elijah bursts onto the scene in 1 Kings 17, denouncing kings, receiving supernatural provision, performing miracles, and single-handedly defeating the whole pagan idolatrous religious system. That's a lot of adjectives. Read 1 Kings 18, 33-39. Isn't that amazing? What faith! But then there's 1 Kings 19, 1-3. What happened there? How could Elijah have forgotten so quickly the God he serves? How does this episode teach us that remembering is not merely a cognitive exercise? How have you been similarly forgetful recently?
Yes. What happens to Elijah here is a pretty classic, it's a pretty classic reaction that we see in human beings all over the place. It's the fact is that, when somebody has reached the peak of their of their ministry, shall we say, Spurgeon used to say there were two of the most dangerous times in a person's ministry is when they are just about to begin a great work, or when they have just completed, God has just done something really remarkable through them. That those are two of the most dangerous times in a preacher's
temptations that
the
are
fall and the sort of the down that comes after the adrenaline rush, the whatever you actors talk about it when they finish the play. You know, there is the sort of all that they've built up inside them is suddenly the balloon has burst.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happened. And if you don't prepare for that properly, and I don't think Elijah had prepared for that properly. I mean, if you read his life, it seems like he's been going from monumental event to monumental event. He's in and out. He's sort of been through all the stress of the widow of Zarephath and all of the, and being sort of schooled in the desert, and then all of that, and then he profoundly tells Ahab. He's just told Ahab certain things. He's had a most incredibly sort of intense period of different sorts of dependence upon God, and now he reaches that, in a sense, the climax of the prophets of Baal, and he's exhausted, he's tired, he's emotionally, and the wimp Ahab goes and whines to his wife Jezebel, and she says, "Don't worry, I'll get him." And it's just, in a sense, the straw that breaks the camel's back for him at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, experiencing rejection in ministry after initial success.
Right.
Yeah. We haven't talked much of, well, I suppose we have, about remembering and forgetting as well. Like, remembering the work that God had just completed, and then almost completely erasing it from your mind, or seemingly so.
Because, in a sense, but because we can become overwhelmed by
the present,
mm-hmm. the actor who's been, for whom there was a magnificent performance, all the adulation that comes from that, all of that, he then goes home and there's nobody there. And there is an enormous vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
Elijah has done, he might have anticipated that there would be a great revival after he had deposited all the...
Yeah.
The prophets of Baal, but he got nothing except for Jezebel threatening to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so what am I doing here?
Mm. Yeah, let's look at our third question, self-deception. After fleeing 120 miles from Jezreel to Beersheba, Elijah travels another 200 miles to Mount Sinai, where he lays his complaint before God. Enter into the emotional space of Elijah the prophet. What is his complaint in 1 Kings 19:10? Where have some elements of truth been coupled with pessimistic exaggeration and self-deception? In what situations are you most susceptible to self-pity and self-deception? What lies are easiest for you to believe?
Well, I guess that depends where you are. I think that, I would say when it comes to the sort of, if you want to know where I'm most susceptible to self-pity and self-deception, it's in my family. When you long for your children to follow Jesus, they splutter, and they're not sure whether they're going to follow him or not or whatever. You feel like, okay, I'm a failure. Mm. Now, those are situations, failures or things that feel like failures are exaggerated in your mind. Mm-hmm. David, it's the classic, when you preach a sermon and everybody comes and tells you what a great sermon it is, and one person comes up to you and says, "David, I didn't understand a word you were saying," I will almost guarantee that one comment, "I didn't understand the word you were saying," will play in your mind for infinitely longer and infinitely louder than the encouragements you receive.
Here, especially if it comes from someone that you respect.
Right. And so you then begin to believe that your sermon was no good. You begin to believe, which is deception. You're deceiving yourself because you're not listening to, you're not remembering, you're not hearing all of the other things that have happened to you. Elijah, he's wrong in saying that he's the only one left, because Obadiah's already told him that he's kept some, but he's forgotten that. But it's easy to forget those sorts of things when you're in a place of enormous stress like he is right here. It's easy to forget some of the encouragement that somebody gave you, maybe a few days later. Obadiah told him there was 100 of them in the caves and whatever. I mean, God says that there's 7,000 of them, but
that's as well.
But that was sort of before the trauma of the prophets of Baal, because it's easy to forget those things, and then the evil one is very careful. He can make that discouragement, like, simply, Jezebel's not scared of him. Jezebel, or at least she's not appeared to be scared of him. She says she can wipe him out. And so it's like, what am I doing all this for? He's lost sight of the things that God has done for him, through him, and right. I believe will continue to do through him. And he's lost sight of his place in God's plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He regains some confidence later. I mean, in 2 Kings 1, he rains down fire on the messengers sent to him, not by Ahab at that point, who's passed away. But yeah, interesting. Our last question, not listening. I hope you will listen to this question, though. This chapter is most well known for the still small voice following thunderous displays of power. What is God communicating in these two verses? And based on Elijah's response, did he get the message? Has God ever had to teach you the same lesson twice?
Yeah, clearly this is a very interesting question, because it's not absolutely clear what God is communicating to, and I'm very well aware that what my interpretation may be will be my interpretation. I think that God is communicating to Elijah. Nothing has changed, Elijah. You still have a play. You still have a part to play in my plan. And so he's allowed him to rest. He's allowed him to be restored, and in a sense he gives him he tells him to go and do something else. He gives him a relationship with Elisha, who becomes his protege, shall we, and will eventually become, he says at the end, and then he went with Elijah as his assistant. So Elijah, one of the interesting things that Elijah has done is he left his only companion before he went, he isolated himself, which is a classic action of people who are in a place of depression. They isolate themselves, they feel sorry for themselves, and all the way through you see Elisha feeling sorry for himself, and nobody is telling him not to feel sorry for himself. Mm-hmm. So I think God is saying, I think the message that God, it's open to you as a group to sort of think maybe there's something else that God might be teaching him. But I think he's saying, Elisha, just get back on your feet. I've still got things for you to do. You've got to finish the task I've given you to do. And I'm going to give you a companion. So I'm going to bring relationship back into your life.
And do you think Elijah's just being stubborn after the theophonic experience where there's the fire and the wind and the earthquake, and he has that same narrow-minded response before and after that event? Does he need a commission in order to wake him up? I mean, why those exact same words in 13 and 14 as in 9 and 10?
I find that very...
Is it... I mean...
I don't know about stubborn, but I think it's taking him... You know, sometimes it takes a while. You know, nobody gave him a Xanax. I think it takes a while to be...
Well, I think they gave him something more powerful than the Xanax, what he did see.
but I think that it takes... Sometimes it takes time to sort of be lifted out of depression. And I think that, you know... I don't know whether I would use the word stubborn, but I think that he's struggling out of I think he's lost confidence. He is depressed, and that's hard. And I think that you know, I learned when I experienced depression in my cancer treatment how difficult it was to, you know, people say, you know, pull yourself together. Now I know that, and that's really, really hard. And I think that sometimes you go around the mulberry bush a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think is happening to Elijah here. Mm. I think it takes him time to lift himself out of that depression. Mm-hmm. Or to be lifted out of that depression. But, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I see here. Because, and that the reason why I see it, and I see it as reflecting what human experience that I have seen multiple times. I think that when I see Elijah happening to Elijah here, I've seen in the lives of people in my office. Mm-hmm. Not that they've seen God, they haven't had the theophany and that, but you know, I see that pattern of behavior.
Yes, well, hopefully we can see some things in our lives in Elijah's life here as a growth group. Thank you for tuning in, and it sounds like we're going to be flipping the pages of the Bible into the New Testament next week, having completed 3 studies in the Old.
Well, yeah, and let this week's character give you a clue.
Stuff. See you then.
As I wait, heart of God, satisfy and sustain.